Admit this, but that's my toilet when I flush it. All right, just so you know, that's what we call the cosmic toilet around here at Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy show. But we're continuing on with quantum electrodynamics because until we get this done, we're not having any guests. So I got lots and lots of really cool guests to come on, including David Icke, who seems to be a regular on this network now anyway. But, you know, it's not quite time yet for guests. I'm having a lot of fun here, getting a lot of response. Now, I want to tell you on Sunday, I'll be down at L.A., so a bunch of you I know are coming out there, thank you. See me, we'll be at the Philosophical Research Society, which is located at 3910 Los Feliz Boulevard, L.A., California, and the phone number there is 323-663-2167. And you folks down there at 1340 AM Tantalk, you need to get on a plane now so you don't miss the show. It's the whole weekend, but my part is on Sunday. Pat Flanagan's going to be there, and a bunch of people. I was looking for the paper on it. Here it is. Okay, we got Pat Flanagan hopefully showing up, Peter Ragnar, David Wolf, a whole bunch of cool people. And you can check it out at thebestweekendever.com. That's thebestweekendever.com. And we just got our New Life magazine in, and the yoga magazine hasn't gotten here. It's at www.newlifemag.com. And if you open up the first page, you're going to see this wonderful full-page color ad that we ran informing people of BBS Radio and what we're doing. And we'll be at booth 504, October 19th through 21, 2007. So we got a lot going on here. We're getting around, you know. We got a lot of hot guests lined up for later on once I understand that everybody gets quantum mechanics. And we'll do call-ins. We'll do, you know, the stuff we do at BBS, which could be anything. You know, Don Newsom is in today, so, I mean, he could pull the plug at any point or he could do something wild. You know, he typically does wild things. And that's what we're all about. We also have the BBS quick chat. Anybody wants to play with that, it's on the front page around my picture there somewhere. I'm just looking at it right now to see if I could find it. I don't see it yet, but I'll find. Oh, there it is, fast chat. So I'll click in the fast chat. Okay, quantum mechanics. We're getting ready to do some research into that, some reading into that. Looking for my notes. because of where the notes go. Notes get around here pretty fast. And my birds might join the show as because it's close to sunset. I'm sure you all enjoyed General Petraeus being back. That was quite a show. So anyhow, I'm gonna go into some background on quantum mechanics. And the reason I'm covering this so much is, you know, in the previous show, just the show that was just on, I heard a comment. You know, if you want to get something done, there people were they were talking, this lovely lady and this wonderful guy, gentleman, were talking about, well, we'll turn it out to the universe to make it happen, okay? Well, if you turn it out to the universe, what you're doing is you're throwing a bunch of sand into the ocean. Yeah, it's in the ocean, it's there. But if you understand quantum dynamics and quantum mechanics and the hologram, because, you know, you're going to hear the word hologram a lot. You know, hologram is a big word around town now, you know, and this is holographic and that's holographic and holographic sound, which I almost started to explain last week and then we had a caller. When you start looking at that, it doesn't really make any sense. You know, if you say, I want to get into the hologram and toss it out to the universe, right? It doesn't do anything. That's why when you get into the projector technology, which is now getting a United States patent, a bunch of them are being issued on this right now as we speak, and actually they're all pending. But because we've proven something here, we've proven something that we're ahead of the times. But it's important to understand the mechanics of it. In other words, life does not smoke a doobie and cruise through it, and everything's cool. It doesn't work that way. Life is about responsibility, purpose, and advancement, you know, spiritual advancement. That's very important to understand that, especially those of you that have families that have children. You know, it's important that your children, you know, they become, to me in my life, they become first priority. Of course, you have to go out and make your living and pull a plowshare in order to make money. The bottom line is, you know, we have responsibilities. At the same time, we have responsibilities to ourselves, which typically are violated. And the fact is that a lot of people out there, especially in families, especially moms that take care of kids, forget themselves. And you don't go out and you don't spend enough time with yourself. You know, like how many of you guys out there that have families spend an hour a day just with yourself, nobody else? That's just as important for the growth and the establishment and the, you know, the forward movement and the progression of a happy, unified field family theory. In other words, family is very important. And I know Pleiadians, you know, I learned a lot from Semyonovsky because I was, up until I had kids, I was a drifter. I moved around a lot. I rode bikes. You know, yeah, I was a scientist. I went to a lot of companies. But in between the thousands of companies that I visited, and all that time I was not married, I was not having a girlfriend a lot of time, I was just a contactee, and I found myself being a drifter, and I really liked it. I really got it out of my system. I got to go out with the American Indians and do ceremonies that were awesome and all that kind of stuff. And by the way, guys, William, I see your stuff up on the board. I'll get to that in a few minutes. So anyway, I did all this stuff. I got it out of my system, and now I'm more settled down because my kids, I raised my kids, and they're all gone now. And I, you know, they're all growing up, and here I am back as a rocket scientist again. But I got a great girlfriend, and everything's cool. So I want everybody out there. But the bottom line is, this didn't happen. I didn't just throw it out to the universe, let it happen. I worked for every inch of freedom, mental, physical, and spiritual, that I ever earned. Because in this world, we're living in a world of compression, of negative energy, of Bushisms, of big oil, big pharma, control, all the junk. You don't turn it out to the universe to get free of that. You work through it. And if you think I'm kidding, there are people over there working to take it away from you that will work over you. Okay? So this is important. Okay? You throw it out to the universe and you're giving them free rein to take away your constitutional freedoms. That's my point. Okay? Once you have a goal and you start working on it, then throw it out to the universe on your particular goal. But not the whole theory of let's get this or that done. Take it by steps and let the universe determine the steps. It makes a lot more sense. And that's when you get into the hologram and you start working it, okay? So anyway, I want to talk about quantum electrodynamics and quantum mechanics a little bit. It's a QED is the quantum electrodynamics. It's a relativistic quantum field theory. This was developed by a number of physicists, of which I got to spend mostly in the 20s. But it mathematically describes all phenomena involving electrically charged particles interacting by means of the exchange of photons. It has been called the jewel of physics for its extremely accurate predictions of quantities like the anomalous magnetic movement of the electron and the Lamb shift of energy levels of hydrogen. Now, what that means is the movement, the first part it's describing here is the movement of electrons, okay? Electrons. So what happens is when you have the movement of electrons, as I said, and I talked about this last week, if you had a little box with a little white background in it, and you had a little hole in the side of the box, and you would shoot an electron beam towards the back of the box, it wouldn't just hit in one little spot. It would hit in one little spot, a main beam, and there'd be a whole line of other little interactive spots, maybe a foot long, next to this little central hole where the electron beam was aimed at. And so what that is describing, what that's telling us, is that there is a wave connected to the electron, okay? When you get into the body, when you get into the body, your body is made up of oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, and carbon. Okay? Carbon determines the formation and behavior of the other three atoms. Oxygen is the animating factor of the body, and hydrogen is the consciousness factor of the body, and nitrogen is the factor of the body that determines the protein growth. So, for example, if you come down with a disease like cancer, obviously you've disturbed the nitrogen atom in the body because it's now growing cells where it shouldn't. They're called tumors. You've also disturbed the hydrogen atom in the body because the hydrogen atom in the body is consciousness. And you've also disturbed the body with oxygen because oxygen, if it's getting to a tumor site, will destroy cancer and it can't reach there. So you suffocated oxygen. And then on top of that, the carbon atom, which arranges everything, is totally sabotaged. So you get the picture, what you've done to your body. You know, you've done a lot of damage to get cancer. Now, you could take a lesser disease, let's like bronchitis. You know, bronchitis would be a disease where you have a viral infection, as cancer is, but it's in one area only. So therefore, and bronchitis is not a nitrogen distribution problem, it's a hydrogen distribution problem and an oxygen distribution problem. Obviously, there's no oxygen getting to the bronchi, and therefore the virus thrives in it, and therefore, with a thriving virus, you have a chest, congestion of the chest. And so all diseases work that way. On the other side of the coin, you take people that are shakers and movers like Richard Branson. You know, they have a very high, they're fairly smart. They have a fairly intuitive feeling, pretty strong. And they're able to consistently and moderately not give it over to the universe for their success, but constantly ask the universe to do what they bid and wait for the universe to give answers. So it depends on how you work with it, why you work with it, and what happens. When we use devices like the receptor, for example, what we're doing there is we're clearing out the body, we're getting rid of the virus, we're making those four atoms work in conjunction with one another, and we're using a gemstone in the bridge of the receptor to determine which of those functions needs the immediate attention. And then what we're doing is over a 90-day period, we're fixing the blood, and over a 120-day period, we're working on the kidneys, and over a year period, we're hooking up the liver. When we get past the first year period, you know, then we can start using the projector technology and getting a lot of use out of it. And one of the interesting things was, you know, we started, you know, marketing the receptor, and then we started marketing the projector, and we wanted people to use the receptor before they used the projector, but we ran into a wall of resistance. And so a lot of you wanted them both at once, and we allowed that technology to go out as once, and then people got mixed results. And then finally I said, go back to the receptor, wear it, learn what it's all about, and then go into the projector technology. Okay, and I don't want to do a show on them tonight. I just want to bring that up because we're talking hologram. Now the word quantum, okay, quantum. you guys on the quick chat, I'm going to get to you in a little bit here. I'm not missing anything you're saying. So anyway, what does the word BBS mean? Don, you can answer that later. Okay, the word quantum is from 1619, means one share or potion. The word electrodynamics was coined by André Ampère in 1822. And if you remember, when you work on your car or your radio, you hear the term amp, right? Amp determines how many coulombs of electricity are determined over a period of a distance in an electroplating solution. And from that, we got the ohm and the volt also. The word quantum is used in physics, was first used by Max Planck in 1900 and reinforced by Einstein in 1905 by his term light quanta. And light quanta is when you deal with what we call chromodynamics. Chromodynamics is a form of physics that I think I wrote about it in my Rays of Truth book. I'm not sure. I will in my new book. But it has to do with the Omegon and bringing color down from the astral plane to the physical plane. Now, quantum theory began in 1900 when Max Planck assumed the energy is quantized in order to derive a formula predicting the observed frequency dependence of energy emitted by a black body. Now, when you get into black body, you get into negative matter. And we're going to do shows on dark matter in the future. But don't worry about that now. What we're trying to get across now is how, see, both the Higgs boson, and when you understand what that is, this is, of course, called part of the standard theory, how the Higgs boson affects our energy. Because if you give something mass in nuclear physics, to give something mass, it's the mysterious Higgs boson. A particle, then when it combines with quarks and quarks and hadrons, gives mass to the central nucleus of the hydrogen atom, and all other atoms, of course, have hydrogen in them at some point in time. Okay, so that's mass. That's mass coming from dark matter. Now, when you're making a wish, whether it be for healing, or whether you're doing a wish for some material object, there's nothing wrong with asking for material objects because we all like, you know, baubles. Everybody likes those. It gives us something to do. It gives us a break from the spiritual side, which gets boring sometimes. It's important, but you got to learn to work between spirit and matter. So you need to, you know, what I find is I need to get this Higgs boson not hooked up in a hadron collider to look at it, but to make it actually work inside my brain, inside my consciousness. Because if it works inside of your consciousness, consciousness exploits what a hadron collider could do anyway. And if those of you who don't know what a hadron collider is, it's the largest atomic smasher. It's a great big giant circle, 30 miles across, with beams going in the right and left direction that collide, you know, midstream after being accelerated to a huge mass and a huge energy towards MeV, speed of light. So anyhow, that same thing that goes on inside one of these hadron colliders would be the same thing that goes on in your consciousness. And the stunning part of it is, on the internalization of it, it's far more powerful than the externalization of it, okay? Far more powerful. So anyway, just so you get an idea of what we're dealing with here, and what I'm trying to do is map out the hologram, give you a map to how it works to your consciousness. It's going to take a little bit of time. I could probably do it in a one-liner if I understood it better, but it might not make that much sense. So anyway, the quantum theory began about 1900, you know, when Max Planck assumed the energy is quantized in order to divide his formula. Dependence of the variance is classical physics. In 1905, Einstein explained the photoelectric effect by postulating the light energy comes in quanta, later known as photons. Now, I work with a lot of photonic energy, primarily with our lasers. And when you work with our lasers, you find that you quantize the crystals, like a master crystal, and any crystal that you have in your domicile or in your near where you located. Okay. In 1913, Niels Bohr invoked quantization in his proposed explanation of spectral lines of the hydrogen atom. In 1924, Louis Broglie proposed a quantum theory of a life wave-like nature of subatomic particles. This phrase, quantum physics, was employed in Johnson's Planck Universe and Light Modern of Physics. And the modern quantum mechanics was born in 1925 with Werner Heisenberg's matrix mechanics and Edwin Schrödinger's wave mechanics and Schrödinger's equation. And when I was talking to you about the squirting the electron into a box and then getting a bunch of lines next to the main target of where you're aiming your electron gun, that becomes the Schrödinger's wave mechanics. And this also goes into nature. it goes into nature. I haven't explained that yet, but I will. I'm going to read a little bit more in some stuff I put together, and then I'm going to talk about it more. In 1927, Heisenberg formulated his uncertainty principle, and the Copenhagen interpretation of quantum mechanics began to take shape. About this time, Paul Dirac, in work accumulating his 1930 monograph, finally joined quantum physics and special relativity, pioneered the use of the operator theory, and devised the Bracket notation, widely used since. In 1932, John von Neumann formulated rigorous mathematical basis for quantum mechanics as the theory of linear accelerators on Hilbert specs. And this, of course, as we know, got Ernest Oscar Lawrence to build the first cyclotron up at the University of Berkeley a few years back, E.O. Lawrence. I think it was 1929, and that's where I came in on the picture because I was working in the late 40s, early 50s, with Dr. Katz, and we had a cyclotron in our lab at the University of Michigan, the Randolph Laboratory building. So this was what I was just explaining there is kind of where, as a kid, I entered the scene. This is what was going on in physics. So I'm just giving you background here so that you understand with some substance what we're talking about when we talk about this crazy stuff of the future. We have a little background. I just feel it was necessary. Quantum chemistry began with Walter Heitler and Fritz London in 1927, the quantum account of the covalent bond of the hydrogen molecule. Now realize that led into the hydrogen bomb. Linus Pauling and others contributed to the subsequent development of quantum chemistry, and of course, what did Linus Pauling discover and understand? Vitamin C. So you got to see that just from this, what I'm sharing with you, just look at the brilliance of, you know, here we're throwing out the whole idea to the universe in the proper direction because each person is, you know, breaking a brow of sweat to get into their, you know, the respective field to be recognized and get some proponent theories out there. And so Linus Pauling comes along and brings out vitamin C, which is a basically a covalent binder of molecules, which then causes the body to, keep your cells together. It creates health and oxygen in your body. I mean, right out of quantum mechanics, we get vitamin C. So this is where people, I mean, have shied away from this level of physics. But the bottom line is, it's all together. And now, you know, as we're getting further, I'm not going to get into this today because we're in enough time. But the new thing that's coming to the table now in cosmology and astrophysics is consciousness. You know, consciousness. All right, we're getting there. But I'm hoping, and we're recording these shows, and we're archiving, and that you can go back and kind of get something out of them in the future, you know? Now, yeah, and I just love going through this part of it. I just decided last week we're not grounded enough with this. The application of quantum mechanics to fields rather than particles, resulting in what were known as quantum field theories, began in 1927. Okay, and that included Dirac, we mentioned him, Paul Dirac, Wolfgang Pauli, Westenkopf, and Jordan. The line of research culminated in the 40s in the quantum electrodynamics of Richard Feynman, Freeman Dyson, Julian Schwager, then intro to manga, and which Freeman, Schwager, and Tamanga received the 1965 Nobel Peace Prize for. Quantum theory of electrons, positrons, electromagnetic field was the first satisfactory quantum description of a physical field in the creation of the annihilation of quantum particles. So now, what happens when you annihilate a quantum particle? Well, first of all, remember, we're talking about quanta, all right? Quanta, meaning at one, my portion. Then we're talking about the quantum energy, the photon. And when we start annihilating photons, what we're doing is creating mini black holes, miniature black holes. And that's a whole other area, a whole new area of physics, okay? So anyway, QED, okay, the line of research culminated in the 40s with quantum electrodynamics. It's called QED, okay? QED, quantum electrodynamics, involved a covariant and gauge variant prescription for the calculation of observable quantities. In other words, quantas of measurement, quantitative measurement, I always thought. Feynman's mathematical technique based on his diagram initially seemed very different from the field-theoretic operator-based approach of Schwager and Tamanga. By Freeman, Dyson later showed the two approaches were equivalent. The renormalization period for eliminating the awkward finite infinite predictions of the quantum theory was first implemented in QED. Even though renormalization works very well in practice, Feynman was never able to be comfortable in his mathematical validity, as he realized as a shell game and hocus pocus and blah, blah, blah. So that served as a role model for everything, all right? Now, a physical interpretation, I'm going to explain that a little bit. In classical optics, light travels over allowed paths and their interference results in Feynman's principle. Similarly, in QED, light or any particle like electron or proton passes over every possible path allowed by apertures and lenses. The observer at a particular location simply detects the mathematical result of all wave functions added up as the sum of line integrals. Or further, this is where we take and we have an atom smasher. Let's say we got a field of deuterons coming down, and we're bombarding calcium. Okay, we would do this in what's called a Wilson cloud chamber. In the Wilson cloud chamber, we would observe spectral lines on film. We would actually have a film in there, and we would see spectral lines. Knowing the velocity, it's computed in the old days, million electron volts, in my time, MeV, now in the new modern times, BeV, billion electron volts, and pretty soon it'll be higher than that with the Hadron Collider. But the bottom line is we know the voltage, we know the accelerated mass of the deuterons that are being accelerated down, and we know the mass, speed, and velocity when we smash into the calcium. So from that, scientists predict what comes up, what's going to fly off of that. We're hitting it with almost the speed of light, and we're getting all these subatomic particles. So what happens is these little subatomic particles have little lines, little spectral lines. If we take calcium out and put a piece of emerald in there, it's going to have spectral lines. These spectral lines are basically computed from what's called spectral analyzers. For example, if you go in with a blood sample, you can do a spectral analysis on it. So they have a basic computation model that they're looking at, but in the nuclear condition, with a strong nuclear force, which is one of the four forces of nature, with a strong nuclear force, we have unpredicted lines, uncalculated lines, and they're much smaller than inscription across the plate. So these then, and they don't go very long. The line goes and stops, whereas the calculated lines go clear off the tape, off the photograph. These other lines just go so far and they stop, and that's the half-life of that particle. So that's how we determine subatomic particles. That's how it all started, just so you understand. Now, I'm going to jump ahead of things here a little bit and jump into string theory. String theory is the basis of the energy field that comes within those spectral lines. In other words, look, now we're not looking at spectral lines anymore. We're looking inside those at those particles, and we're looking inside of those particles. And we're going down into what are Planck dimensions, 10 to the minus something dimensions of things, and looking at nature at that point. And that's where we start getting into what's called string theory, okay? And string theory has two forms. It has a protein side and an atomic side. On the protein side, now first of all, understand this. If you took our atmosphere, and, originally one of the scientific theories is if you take our atmosphere and make a spark in it, that spark will ignite an energy field and cause the proton to assimilate and start life. In other words, you take an oxygen, carbon dioxide atmosphere like we have and put a spark in it, in other words, a heat point, and it will actually trigger off a reaction that will cause life to start. That's pretty much the basis of some of the Darwinism, if I call it, of modern science. So when you start looking at the human DNA and how it works, you've got two sugars, you've got two phosphates, all right? You've got four basic amino acids, and they form form in a spiral. Spiral then goes into genes, gene structure. The gene structure, goes into larger structures till you end up, with a complete, cellular structure, from the atomic to the cellular structure. And when you're looking at the atomic cellular structure, for example, of DNA, you start to realize that there's a consciousness element involved here. And so we're playing around with our receptors and our projectors. We're dealing with a conscious element of the string theory, which, when quantized, in other words, focused into the strong nuclear aspect, the strong nuclear light nuclear force, the strong nuclear force, gravity, electromagnetism. Those are the basic four energies of physics, in all physics. So we're dealing with a strong nuclear force, which becomes very powerful. And the mind, you know, like, for example, if you see a martial arts, you know, you watch Steven Seagal with his Aikido. He does all that stuff for real. He's a homeboy from Kalamazoo. At 17 years old, he had an ashram in Japan. Think about that as a reincarnated master. But also, you see when these guys hit, you know, a board with their hands or their 10 ice blocks, it breaks in half. You see them, you know, do incredible things with the chi force in the body. It's, the chi force is nothing more than a discipline of what I'm talking about now. And it takes time to understand it. And we've provided, one of the things I've done in life is to provide tools to make that life force stronger. As a result, we've got clients like Wesley Snipes, who's, I think, a sixth or, I don't think he's a, I think he's a sixth degree black belt in martial arts. And Seagal, you know, these people have become clients, and they utilize our, you know, the receptor projector technologies, which is the holographic force, to improve on their skills. So these people are, you know, sending out the energy. It becomes, you know, it becomes very interesting. Well, everybody can do this. It's not, you don't need the discipline that Wesley Snipes puts in 6 hours a day to become a martial artist, because you may not want to be a martial artist. You may need to be 3 hours a day to be a musician, or 4 hours a day to be a musician. Or you might want to be a science. You want to learn, make great discoveries in science. So that, you know, it takes study. It takes work. Just don't throw it out to the universe, okay? Okay, if classical optics light travels over allowed paths, and there are interference patterns in Fermat's principle, similar in QED, like any other particle, like an electron or proton, passes over every possible path by allowed by apertures and lenses. The observer at a particular location detects the mathematical result of all wave functions added up as the sum of the line integrals. For other interpretations, paths are viewed as non-physical mathematical constructs that are equivalent to other possible infinite sets of mathematical proportions. And I'm not going to go into the math, but I'm just right up to the math, where you got Planck's constants and Dyer matrices and all this kind of stuff, which really doesn't matter, you know, for what we're talking about. Because what the key word here is that these diagrams, okay, is that all paths are viewed as non-physical constructs of one another, and also we're looking at the electron or the proton passes over every possible path allowed by apertures or lenses, okay? Now, that's quantum mechanics. That's what we play with at Paradigm. That's what you guys are playing with out there. Even if you aren't using our product, even in thought, you're playing with that. And that's now why, for example, you might say, well, what happened 100 years ago? What was anybody doing it then? Well, a lot of people were doing it then, and they became, you know, the matriarchs of science of today, like Einstein and Planck and those guys. They were doing it then. Was the rest of the world doing it then? No, not at all. How many people knew about Einstein at the turn of the century? Or, you know, it was actually a little past the turn of the century. Not too many. You know, Schroeder, all those guys, not too many. But today, everybody, you know, everybody knows Einstein. At least they know him. Especially if you say Einstein, think of that parrot that just died, you know, which is kind of sad. It was on the news together because I have an African gray. But anyway, looking back at that, that's quite energetic. It's really cool stuff. And that's what we're all about right now, is really cool stuff, because everybody's becoming a science. Everybody's getting into music. Everybody's getting into something. And if you're not getting into something and not doing anything, you're going to be rotting away. Okay, you're not going to go anywhere, and you're going to know you're not going to go anywhere. So anyway, I'm looking now. William asked me to talk more about the projectors tonight. You want some for your school? That would be great. We'll give you a special school discount. And William, what school are you going to, by the way? I'd like to know. And also, how you guys like the Friday night show? It gives me some freedom for the weekend. And, you know, I just kind of like it better. And I think we're doing it earlier now so that the people back east can get into it a little bit more, and people in Europe. Okay. Yeah, I'd like to know what your school is, William. Now, let's talk about holographic sound. Okay. Everybody's been asking me, will that enhance the meditation? Forget if you have any of our products, just the sound. Okay. Yeah, it will. It really will. And I just got a big record deal from Rapleson Records. You can look it up on the internet, Rapleson Records. They're very, very strong. The guy that Peter Rapleson writes for Madonna, he's written for Fleetwood Mac, and he's written some of the biggest songs on the planet. His name is Peter Rapleson. His dad produced a lot of the biggest movies on the planet, like Easy Rider, and then going back to his grandfather, he put sound on the talkies. So let me explain to you about this holographic sound, how it works. Okay, I have a machine here. It's called a wave synthesizer made by Korg. All right, and I'm sure all of you have heard of what a synthesizer does. I mean, you've heard it plays strange sounds. You know, I collect old synthesizers. I've got old Moogs, and I've got Mellotrons, and old Continental Voxes, and ARP. You know, 2600s. I got the old stuff. That's when you'd hear on the Twilight Zone. That was a really out you go. And that was the song that you heard on the Twilight Zone. That was coming out of an old ARP 2600, or maybe even earlier, one of the Bob Moog's prototypes. That was the beginning of all this stuff. So then, as we went along in time, we got into synthesizers that had what they call voices. And the more voices you had, it's like you could get two or three synthesizers going simultaneously within one, like you get the sound of two memory Moogs and an ARP in one synthesizer. And then we got into polyphonics, which is how many, when you push a key down, how many sounds play. In other words, the old synthesizer, you pushed one key and got one sound. As the polyphonic part of it got better, you could push two keys or three keys and get three different sounds. And so all the way up to the polyphony now of where you get 14 or more sounds, okay? That's the newer synthesizer. Okay, that's fine. So now imagine something else. If you have a speaker on the right-hand side of the room and you have a speaker on the left-hand side of the room, okay, and you play a sound through a synthesizer, what you end up is getting a sound that goes from, if it's stereo, from the right to the left. If you're playing one of these new complicated synthesizers with 10 different synthesizer modules built in, you get 10 sounds simultaneously going from the left to the right. Okay? If you go into surround sound, 5.1 or something higher in surround sound, you now have some speakers placed around you, and you'll get a sound almost like you're in the room. Somebody could be playing a guitar and walk completely around you. But the bottom line is you're still doing what's called a panoramic sweep. You're not doing anything holographic. You can really get out there with some great synthesizer sounds in 5.1 surround sound, but that's not holographic sound. It's not even close, okay? So now let me explain holographic sound and how it works. In a wave machine, and it's a lot of programming, and they don't even make these things anymore because they were too complicated for most musicians or too time-consuming for most musicians, but the way that this works is in the wave station, the one that I use, a couple of them actually. You put it. You'll say you have a flute synthesizer, okay, and you got A speaker A and speaker B. We're just going to explain this in stereo. Okay, you play this flute synthesizer. The sound comes out of the left speaker, and let's say it's 30 feet between the speakers. Okay, so the sound comes out of the left speaker, a flute sound, and goes out 2 feet. And stays there. So you can hear it on the left speaker coming out a little bit and stopping. It never gets to the right speaker at all. Its volume is there. Okay, so now let's say you play a trumpet. The trumpet, we allow that to come out, you know, 20%. So now you can hear the flute kind of over there in the corner in the left-hand speaker. But now the trumpet's a little bit more out in the middle of the room. It's not halfway there. So now you go back and you play a guitar sound. Okay, the guitar comes out, you know, and it comes out halfway. So now you've got the flute, the trumpet, and the guitar, and you're halfway through. And you keep building instruments or sounds, and you keep stepping them until you get all the way to the left speaker. Okay? Then what you do is with a holographic sound is you now have to take a surround sound, and you have to do the same process, repeat it again, to the speakers that are behind you. So you end up having sounds that go so far, they pan so far and stop. Another sound comes and pans beyond that. And so that's called wave synthesis, and that's what creates a hologram because you start building layers. Not only do you create each one of these layers, and each individual sound as a in a fraction of the layer across the mean distance to the right to the left, but you also start creating it from the top to the bottom. And then you start merging them, and that's what holographic sound is. And nobody out there at all, any time, way, shape, or form, has even come close to this. But this is what we're going to be doing when we do it, and that's why it's taken a while. You know, one thing about Dr. Fred and Paradigm, like with the Rays of Truth book, we're getting this. It's coming along. It's going to be hot. It's going to be, in my mind, a pretty cool book. But anyway, it'll be way out from what we've done so far, and it'll also be understandable by the general public. You know, then we'll have, of course, the deep, the darker version of it, but where it goes deep. But anyway, so the same thing with sound. We're getting there. You know, I've actually played a concert this year. I'll play some more and stuff. Okay. Now, okay. So now I'm Don Williams, active here. When using the projectors, do you need to program a wish only once? Okay. Once again, you know, everybody's different on that level, on any affirmation. You know, it depends on your sincerity and your belief. You have to believe in order to receive. If you don't believe with enough intensity, then what happens is, no, it won't work at all. I mean, yeah, with a holographic projector, it's going to work, but it's going to take a while. And that's why, you know, these things are so strong that what we've had to do is lady, her name is Almeen. She's runs a spiritual teacher up north in Oregon. She's one of my clients. And she came down here, and we did a seminar together about 3 or 4 years ago. And she got one of the first projectors that you wear on your neck, and it was all diamonds. And she's a very, very skilled psychic, very incredible, very out there psychic, well recognized for it. So she put this diamond one on and just fried her, okay? She already believed in what she could do anyway. She didn't need any affirmations there. So it turned her energy into laser energy, and she was frying everything. So she said, oh, my God, Fred, this is way too much for me, but I see what it does. Can you turn it down? Where's the volume control, you know? So what we did is we figured out that in wave mechanics, you know, quantum mechanics, that violet's the lowest frequency of the astral plane, getting on it, and red is the highest one. So what we ended up doing is putting sapphires. We went to the middle of the band, which is yellow, and put that in there, and she loved it. She never changed it, because it's not like a receptor where you evolve through the stones as your chakras get higher in frequency. It's more like the energy of your solar plexus going through your spirit and your mind. So, yeah, we had to do that. And then William says, this will be great for our science department. Do we need more than one? You definitely need more than one, because you need to do reflection. The normal number of big projectors is 4, and it comes with a couple of lasers. You need to use lasers because we're playing around with quanta of light, quanta of energy, okay? Let's see. Does one projector do the same group as using a group of them? No, it does not. When you use projector technology, one does not do the same. It amplifies in multiples of 10. So so one is 1 times 10th power, and then the next one is 1 times 10 to the 100th power. And so you end up with an infinite amount of energy. You end up with a Planck constant going backwards, or infinite energy when you get to 4. Beyond 4, it's hideous. It's just ridiculous. And you also need to use this is what we found now. I'm not just saying what you need to do. I don't mean to be directive, but we find that you need a star orb to ground out any negative energies, because a lot of them come out of the woodwork, just setting the fields up. We start setting up these quantum fields in your room and then start programming them. It's amazing what happens to the physical body. It releases all kinds of weird toxins, and these weird toxins, of course, manifest as astral entities sometime, and they aren't so cool. So you need to vaporize them as they come out of your body. Okay. Let's see what the next question is. When using one projector, the next one is, some have multiples from listening. We're not sure what makes a difference. I don't understand that question. Can you give us an example of words you use in program projectors? Well, it doesn't matter what the words are, it's the intent. Because the projector reads your spirit, pretty much. I mean, it reads the electrons. Let's see, when I say spirit here, I mean electron flow in the body. Now, let's just talk about electron flow in the body for a minute, okay? Being on this prison planet that we live on now, the Earth, none of us are perfect. If any of us was perfect, we wouldn't be here, you know, or we'd be God of the planet or something. But I haven't seen God of the planet, and we're all here. So obviously we're here by choice, probably, and also to work off our karma, to balance ourselves, to get to a higher goal, which is great. You know, my higher goal is just the path. The journey is my trip. I don't have any destination per se. So anyway, you know, as we go along the journey, it's kind of neat to enrich the journey. Okay, but let's say you're walking around the path, you're doing pretty good, and you walk into a bunch of poison ivy, okay? Or you're walking down the path, and you sit down on a cactus, okay? And let's say you have a tendency to do that for 10 years. You don't know why, but spontaneously you walk off the path, either sit down on a cactus or get poison ivy. Well, obviously, there's something in your personality that's guiding you off the path, making you, you know, get poison ivy and sit on cactus, right? So that needs to be corrected. Well, a long time ago on this planet, there were a bunch of wise men that were also healers, and people like Linus Pauling, who was also a cosmologist, decided that maybe herbs should be looked at in Ayurvedic medicine. So they started looking at herbs. And what they found, when they started looking at herbs, they looked at the chemistry. First, of course, they didn't look at the chemistry. They just used them, you know. They fooled around with them, trial and error. They got results. And as time went by in the Ayurvedic, you know, we're talking millennia here, not overnight. As they got results, then finally what happened was they were able to say these herbs do these certain things to these kinks. In other words, here's an herb that, if you take it, you're not going to have a tendency to sit on cactus anymore. You're going to realize it's going to prick your butt, and you're not going to like it. And here's an herb that that you might take, and probably you'll know the difference between poison ivy and a rose bush, and so you won't walk into it anymore. It may expand your awareness to get you to not walk into it, or it just might take the itch out. It might be like calamine lotion, you know. So basically, herbs began to work for schizophrenia, you know, paranoia, for low blood sugar, for so many things, for different kinds of diseases, sore throat, you know, tons of disease, heart problems like foxglove. More and more stuff started to happen with herbs. Okay, you get the picture. Well, with more and more stuff happening with herbs, psychological walking off the path problems became manageable, I should say. They became manageable. And so in becoming manageable, life started to change, and the Ayurvedic term came along, and as a result of the Ayurvedic term coming along, we began to see medicinal qualities. Out of the medicinal qualities, we developed homeopathic energy and things like that. Okay, now, let's stick a herb, let's just take ginseng, for example, and stuff it in a Wilson cloud chamber. What do you think we're going to see? And smash it with some Zutrons, okay? What do you think we're going to see? What you're going to see is you're going to see, you know, in a cloud chamber, we're going to put it into a strong nuclear force. We're going to take this ginseng apart. And what we're going to see is a quantum phenomenon of atomic changes in this structure, okay? And what we are actually seeing is we're showing the electron speeding up, stopping, taking off again, being everywhere and every when at once in the predicted field that it's supposed to be in. However, it's never actually observed until an observation attempt is made. So what that means, I know you guys love this stuff, what that means is, let's say your aura, because you have a tendency to walk into poison ivy, has a hole in it in the upper left-hand corner, okay? Well, when you look at the herb in the quantum imprint of that herb, it's going to look like your aura with that hole filled in. So when you put this herb, you know, this, let's say ginseng, back to that again, into your body, it's going to have a quantum dynamic that's going to stimulate your aura, so that particular hole in your aura is no longer there, and that would be probably a psychological problem if you're dealing with, you know, probably attitude, maybe, you know, negative, positive thinking. It would fix it. It just bottom line fix it. Or slippery elm bark might have another little hole in it. You might have a little hole in your aura, say, on your right side. And so you go out and get some slippery elm bark, and it gets rid of schizophrenia. It helps you, you know, calm you down, because it supplies an electrical field or a quantum field into your aura field which makes you whole again. And that's the beauty of understanding, you know, herbs along with nuclear physics, quantum mechanics, because there's no difference. Plants have the same energy. Because why do plants have that energy? Because plants get fueled out of the dissolving black holes in the universe, and they act like antennas in the seeds. Remember, the seed is the most powerful unit of energy in the universe anyway, as far as we're concerned. And so that seed gets its energy from an evaporating black hole across space and time. And we get our physiological and psychological quirks from living not only on this planet in different spaces and time, but living on all the places that we've lived in. So there you begin to see the example of where herbs and nuclear forces and psychological quirks all come together. So when we deal with the field of projectors and receptors, it's a bigger field than we're just talking about them. There's a whole lot of other stuff because we do use biochemistry to enhance them. Okay? Okay, now, let's see, William says, can you give an example of words? I think I went over that. There are no example of words. Like I said, it's how much do you believe in order to, how much can you receive? And to a lot of people, it's like, well, I believe in stuff and it doesn't happen. No, you don't. You really have to believe. And sometimes people have to practice doing yoga, breathing, exercise, to get their belief thing system structured in the first place. You just can't lay around. I mean, most people anyway, including myself, cannot lackadaisically lay around and expect enough chi force to be manifested to enhance the belief system. Okay? So then William says, thank you for our four-piece science department. Well, we're going to throw some lasers in. We'll get, because you're a school, we're going to give you a bunch of free stuff to really enhance that. We'll work with you guys. I love working with schools out there. I really do. Is there any other questions out there that people have, or you want? We got time for like one call in or something. If somebody wants to call in, and we've covered a lot of stuff tonight. It's almost to the end of the show. I'm going to go back over a few things here. Okay, this weekend, the Philosophical Research Society. Okay, that's where. By the way, that's where it was founded by Manly P. Hall. And he was one of my mentors in my metaphysical studies when I read his book, Secret of the Ages, and a few other books that he wrote. And I met Manly P. Hall one day up there at the either the Bodhi Tree restaurant or the Source restaurant. The Source restaurant was really a great place. We're going to have a lot of those people on. That was back in the late 60s, early 70s, when everybody was on a God trip. And a guy was on there. We called him Father Yod. And he had a group. They started the vegetarian restaurant. First he started the Aware Inn up in Hollywood. Then he started the Old World. And then he started the Source. And I went to all of them as he made them happen. And these are the most amazing, amazing restaurants that I'd ever been in. I wasn't drinking, and I hadn't drank alcohol in a long time. And I wasn't into meat anymore. I just turned vegetarian. And I'm telling you, I've never had such a great time. And the Source family, Andre Prebinger's daughter was there. I mean, there was everybody from the local people, the world-famous kids in there just hanging out, washing dishes and serving food and cooking. And I saw, that's where I met Michelle Pfeiffer. I was wearing a pyramid. She came over and sat down with me and started talking. We became good friends. Marlon Brando hung out there. I mean, it was just a really in spot. So I'm going to be having the people from the Source. They just got a new book out. I don't know the name of it. I got it around here somewhere. You can look up the Source. I think it's the Source Inc. or something on the internet. So they're coming on pretty soon, that family. It's going to be a great show. Anyhow, getting back to Manly P. Hall, I'll be speaking up there this coming Sunday. Yeah, I got a caller there.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Hello? Fred. Hi there.
Hi, who's this?
Dr. Fred, this is Sandra from Ohio. I've spoken with you before.
Yeah, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm great. How are you?
Oh, good.
That's good. I missed the first part of your program. I'm really sorry. I almost never miss it. But I did hear you were talking about the projector.
Right.
And I have to say that I'm so happy with my receptor. It's been 3 months this week, and it's doing wonderful things for my health. Absolutely wonderful.
Oh, yeah. What's the most exciting thing you're getting now?
Well, I've had problems with adrenals and one kidney that was atrophied at one point, and an autoimmune disease, and my energy level is getting better and better. I'm finding I don't have the urgency with urination that I used to have. It's like my kidney's getting stronger, and it's just, you know, across the board, I'm feeling better.
Yeah, I remember when you first started out, you were a little bit skeptical, weren't you?
No, not me. You must be thinking of someone else.
Skeptical.
No, but I wasn't sure it would do as much as it's doing. So, yeah, this is great. But I wanted to ask about the projector. I ordered a pendant projector, and I should have it in probably another couple of weeks.
Yeah, we're getting them out pretty quick now.
Yeah, but I asked for, I think Mikkel had recommended citrine stones in it originally, and then I called in and talked with you and Steve Barish at the same time on air. And Steve had said that he thought a zircon stones would be fine with it. And then I just heard what you said about Altina or whatever her name is, the psychic. I do psychic work also.
Yeah,
I do psychic work also, and my grandmother worked professionally as a psychic and a medium. I've worked professionally for 22 years full time at this, and I've had pretty good luck at manifesting even before the receptor, you know, let alone a projector. So I'm wondering if maybe the zircon would be too much for me.
I don't know. If you don't like it, then send it back and we'll change it. That's what we did with Almeen. I made one up for it, and I just took the stones out and switched them out for the, I had to order them, but it didn't take long.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can switch the stones back and forth on these things, but I don't know. What receptor are you wearing now?
It's the yellow sapphire.
How do you like it?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's a duotone, yellow sapphire, and I love it.
Well, I would probably go with sapphires then. I don't know. They're probably a little bit more money than a cubic zirconium, but sounds to me you're like Almeen, and you should go to a, you know, it really sounds like you would be the type of person that would really like, you know, sapphire.
Hmm. Okay.
I get that feeling, you know, that it would be good.
Okay. Okay, and I have one more question. I don't know how much time you have left.
I've got about a minute or two here, about 1 minute, actually.
Well, then I'll give a quick question, I guess. I've always felt connected to the Orion system. You talk about the Pleiades and the Andromedans, and there was just a brief reference of Orions in your book. But that name always seemed to resonate as very spiritual and home-feeling, Orion, and I had recurring dreams as a kid. That I need to talk to you about some other time, but it seemed to me that my feeling was the Pleiadians were kind of like early in our culture as humans, maybe at the point of early 20s, and the Andromedans would be maybe in their mid 30s as far as understanding and consciousness.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. Yeah,
and then the Orions would be more like middle aged, you know, coming into full flower and full knowing and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you? Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, except I might. Yeah, it's probably because the Orions are old warriors, you know.
Ah.
And the Andromedans never were. The Andromedans live about 5,000 years in one body. The Pleiadians live about 1,500. And I have no idea about how long the Orion people live, because probably 50,000 years. But I've never been a contactee of them, never had any direct interface. And I haven't met anybody yet that, to me, convinced me they had either. People have claimed to be, but there's a certain amount of facts that need to come forth from their little mouths to convince me, you know, my stubbornness that they are genuine and really know what they're talking about. And I've found a common thread through all of these societies, and that is what I've been talking about, the quantum dynamics, the quantum mechanics.
Ah.
All these guys are totally, they are so centered on quantum theory in their behavior. It's scary. And that's why I finally decided to really bring this out. I know there's some math involved if you want to learn it, but math isn't necessary to understand the generality of physics, and it's very important now because everybody wants to go holographic.
Yes.
And people don't know what a hologram is. A hologram is a direction of your electrons in your body with the amalgamation of everybody else's and everything else's, and that's what it's all about, and that's what we're doing. Anyhow,
wow.
I think we're kind of out of town, dear.
Well, thank you very much.
And I got to go, but you know what? It was great that everybody listened in tonight. I have a heck of a lot of, a lot of response here as usual. And I try to get all the emails done and everything. And next week I'll probably be out of town, so I'll probably have to do a rerun for at least for Friday. then I'll be back. We're going to look at some caves and we're going into the underground world, you know. So that's what's coming up next. So anyhow, this has been Dr. Red Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. And I hope everybody enjoyed it. You know, you can always reach me at Paradyne.com. I've got to get my jetliner warmed up here so I can get out of here. And pretty soon, I think we're going to have a lot more interesting things to talk about. So now I've got my taxi coming, and here we go.
Hello, this is Maurice Tramell, host of the new